When that bass crashes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Maybe you're doing dishes. Maybe you're doing the laundry. Maybe you're on a walk. Maybe you're in traffic. Whatever the case, we're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Native and DoorDash. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show, all about games. And there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who dances like everyone is watching, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello. I do. It's like, I can't dance unless all eyes are on me, and it's like, you
all
know.
Eyes on me. All eyes on me, right? That's your song. That's your jam.
Especially when I'm dancing, yes.
Hey, we got a big show. We're going to talk Vigi games. There's some interesting news, games we're talking about. But before we do, I want to just say thank you to everybody that sent us feedback about last week. A very different kind of episode last week. And you all were so overwhelmingly supportive of us talking about some very difficult issues, both at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for this audience. I'm grateful for the support that you guys and gals send to us every week. I got lots of stuff on Twitter. We got tons of emails, and almost all of them were very supportive. There were some.
And the rest were about how I still don't know PC building.
Yes, right. Very hot takes about your lack of knowledge. No, but interestingly, we were talking about violent video games and guns in video games, specifically in the aftermath of yet another series of horrible shootings here in the United States. And I came to the show with a very heavy heart, as did all of us last week, and it persists. You know, this is not something that just goes away a week later, but I found it very interesting that the vast majority of the supportive emails we got, almost all of them, came from listeners outside the U.S. I don't know what to make of that, but I thought it was interesting and I thought it was worth mentioning. We got many, many, many emails, and the vast majority came from Australia, Canada, Scotland, the U.K., Patrick Beja, our frequent guest, sent a very, very lovely email. Lots of people talking about how they feel about the United States from outside the United States. And I thought that was very interesting, and I appreciate it. It's good to have perspective from those who aren't living inside this country, because I think we get a little myopic here about that. But anyway, I want to just take a second at the top of the show to say thank you to all of you who took a moment to say that you were open to being a little more introspective sometimes and taking a hard look and asking tough questions about our hobby. So thank you all. All right. We're going to have a fun episode this week, hopefully. And we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Dial In Your Label on Consoles. Because from Gamer Tag Radio, we have Paris Lilly joining us for the first time. Hello, Paris.
Hey, how you doing? And thank you so much for inviting me on the show. This is quite the honor. I'm very happy to be here today.
Oh my gosh, it's our honor as well. It's a long time in coming. We've met and talked several times at events over the years, and it took too long to make this happen, but I'm so pleased to have you.
Yeah, this is great. Let's talk some video games. It should be fun.
All right, let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Great community over there. I urge you to check it out and become a part of it. But Paris, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I want to talk about this No Man's Sky, the new, I guess, expansion update that's coming out for it.
Yeah.
Because I've never played No Man's Sky. I've been aware of it since way back when Jeff Keighley had the reveal when he was doing whatever version of, you know, the Game Awards at that time. And it's always been a game I've been interested about, but obviously we know the issues that it had when it launched and it didn't live up to expectations. I know they've done a lot of improvements over
time. It launched? I thought No Man's Sky was that game. It was, it been in early access for 3 years and now it's coming out and we're all excited about it.
Christian's still on his starting planet. So.
well, be as that may, but yeah, Beyond. I guess that's what they're calling this now, right? No Man's Sky Beyond, this yes. New expansion. Is it coming the 14th? So I guess next week is when it's officially out?
Yeah, next week. And it is yet another giant free update to the game that is going to add a whole bunch of new functionality, including VR support, which I am so excited about.
Why, Jeff? Why VR particularly?
Why VR am I excited about? We'll get to that. We'll get to that later. But that's just the beginning of what Beyond brings to the game. It really transforms No Man's Sky into an MMO. It's crazy. This is the game that launched back in 2016 with the idea that, yeah, everybody's in a shared universe, but it's so big and vast that you'll never bump into each other. And that's the way we want it, said Hello Games. And, you know, we want this to be a solitary, lonely experience. And then a bunch of people tried to force the game to find each other and be in the same place at the same time. And the game wouldn't let them. And they're like, oh, you lied to us. We're not in the same shared universe after all. Yada, yada, yada. Then over the following several years of updates, they made the game more in line with a shared experience. In fact, the game has allowed 4 players to interact with each other for quite a while now, since one of the other previous big updates. But now Beyond is going to allow 32 player missions,
wild
parties of 32 players. And they're adding a hub world called Nexus, which is going to work a lot like Destiny's hub world does, where you can teleport there from any place in the massive procedural universe and back to where you were. So if you're on this lonely, if you're on your starting planet and you're making your starting planet exactly how you want it to be, you can teleport to the hub world, hang out with giant groups of people, show off your cool loot and your upgrades and all your cool stuff and strut around like a peacock, and then come back to your lonely home world and stay there and never venture out in the galaxy at all or explore anything. or you can invite people back to your home world and show them all the cool upgrades and buildings and stuff that you've found there and built there. So this really becomes this shared universe experience that is still infinitely expandable and procedural and has, you know, all this vastness that is what No Man's Sky launched with, but allows you to bring people to places, show off stuff. It's also got planets that are being transformed into specific social spaces. It's sounding more and more like what they describe in Ready Player One. There's going to be a planet that's built to work sort of like Rocket League with ball and vehicles.
There's like full electricity and logic based calculations. I'm going to get the words wrong, but like it's weird, right? Before the game was huge and it's incredibly expansive universe, but now the game is huge, right? Right, in terms
it
of like
certainly seems that way,
everything it can do. And this is on top of all the other, or like at least 2 other large free updates where it's like, you know, the flora and fauna are more representative of what people were expecting back when the first trailer kind of came out, and you mentioned this to me earlier in the week. It's like the default position now is third person. You can still play first person if you want, but
you can mount animals in the Beyond update. You can get animal mounts, which sounds amazing. They're talking about this being a full 2.0 style version of this game. It's almost like a sequel. Sean Murray said that the game has always been about a lot of planets, and there just wasn't enough to do. He said it doesn't hold the same thrill for me after so many hours of entertainment, but this new edition, No Man's Sky 2.0, is full of new possibilities. There's been a real concerted effort, he says, from us to bring the universe a bit closer together. This keeps the game fresh. People who are playing with a friend play for way longer and enjoy it more.
Huh.
So, Paris, I want to ask you, as somebody who has never played this game, this is a really – I love that we get your perspective on this, because does this – let me frame it this way. We've talked about this game on the show for 3 years off and on, and – many times when we've brought it up, there's been sort of a stink of yeah, but on it. Yeah, but it doesn't feel like a new game. It feels like it doesn't get a second chance to make a first impression. But maybe on you, it does. It gets a first chance to make a first impression. Are you interested in this? Does this feel like a new game release? Or does it come with a lot of baggage of your previously held impressions of what people thought about this game?
Yeah, and that's kind of the beauty of this, the fact that I did not play it. Sure, I've seen and read what everyone has been saying over the years about the game, but when I saw this update, this checked a lot of boxes for the kind of games that I like to play. As soon as I saw it at 32 players support and obviously a lot of the co-op activities that you're going to be able to do, I go, wait a minute, I think I need to play No Man's Sky. I think I want to jump in and actually try this out, because to me, this gets closer to that original vision of what they were promoting, you know, when the game, you know, initially launched. So it's almost a thing of, yeah, maybe it was kind of in early access and I just waited until the final 1.0 product is coming out. So absolutely.
You're the smart one.
Yeah. Not all the time. But but I think what I've seen from this, and I've actually seen Sean Murray just tweeting up a storm here the last few days. Like I fully admit it's piqued my interest now. I want to get hands on with this. I want to play it. I want to deep dive into it and explore. And the more people that are out there playing, obviously, it sounds like the better that the game is going to be. And I think that's the potential that it can finally realize, you know, what the vision of this game should be now. So absolutely, I'm going to check it out.
It's got this really wonderful perfect storm of coming at a time when there's not a lot of other big releases
yep.
hitting. And it this trailer that they released for Beyond, really well done, very evocative, mm-hmm. and the game looks great. My question to you, Christian, is now that this game is in VR and looks as good as it is, I haven't played this update yet, obviously, but just so I know, can a game that was released in 2016 be my game of the year in 2019? Just asking for a friend.
In my personal opinion, 100% yes. I think it was for last year's favorite of the year kind of pretext, maybe when I was still doing at least 20 more minutes. Like the thing that I came to for myself is, yes, it, you know, however you want to define it, like this is as big as a lot of games that come out, you know, that are in that conversation. And I totally think that large updates, patches, expansions can make games up for consideration for game of the year. Like in the quote unquote official term, will it hit in every publication style thing? I don't know, probably not. But, you know, the same way that I think Fortnite, when it was in early access, or PUBG in early access, could have been up for consideration for game of the year. I think a huge update like this that adds so much to the game and is kind of a relaunch of what this game is, 100%. Will it be your favorite game of the year? I still think Star Wars is going to cut some holes in your list and move to the top, but 100%, yes, it can be, and I think it should be considered.
I am so excited about this. As I mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago, I bought it again on PC during the Steam summer sale because it was heavily discounted and I knew that this update was coming. So I bought it again because I've only ever played it on PlayStation 4, And I didn't want to play it on PlayStation VR. I wanted to play it on good PC VR, especially because, as I'll talk about later, as Christian hinted, my Valve Index arrived. So I'm very, very excited. But I am. It's super weird how uninterested in this game I have been, and now what a pendulum swing my emotions have gone into. I am so excited for this. I think being able to interact with other players is really a benefit. It is really a huge thing to feel like, oh, all of this discovery and work and, you know, time that you put into something can yield results in that I can show it off to somebody. I can be like, oh, hey, look, oh, you got that. I've got this. I'm super excited about that. I think the game ultimately looks so much more interesting. There's farming coming into this thing. You can like have animals and farm them for materials and build all kinds of other cool things. And there's quests, that Nexus hub will have NPCs walking around to give out quests to do things. Like, it's an MMO now. It's the space MMO that I was hoping it kind of was when it launched. And now it seems like this game really is becoming that. And it took 3 years, but kudos to these guys and gals at Hello Games. This team, you know, Sean Murray tweeted out this week that it was 8 years ago today that I wrote the first code for what would become No Man's Sky. They weathered that storm of the up and down roller coaster of getting all the crazy hype and, oh my gosh, your game is the second coming. And then the crash of that wave onto the beach and the letdown that everybody felt about, oh, it's not everything we've ever wanted. And, oh, you misrepresented it. And how dare you? And they weathered all of that. And they just stuck with this game and worked on it and worked on it and improved it and have put out all of these things for free, which is another reason that I really wanted to buy the game a second time, because I want to reward that kind of commitment and effort. It feels like this, the story of this game has done a 180 in a way that almost nothing ever gets a chance to. You know, you get the narrative of something written in such a way where people have made up their mind.
I don't know. I think traditionally, yeah, like longer ago, yes, but I think we're seeing more and more examples of games getting second chances. One,
do you think Fallout 76 is going to, like, in 3 years is going to be?
I mean, it already is
amazing.
In one year, it is. I mean, half of Bethesda's press conference this year was thanks to our community. We're listening to you. We have Battle Royale. We introduced all this stuff. They're still working on it. The biggest example is
Elder
Fortnite.
Scrolls Online is that too. Elder Scrolls Online did exactly that too. It released to very negative feelings, and then it's now one of the most enduring MMOs out there.
Yeah, so Elder Scrolls, potentially Fallout 76, Fortnite just being against the world, and Warframe, which we've talked about a bunch on this game, and I'm still
I don't think Warframe was anything negative about it.
It was very middling.
Okay.
And it was like, there's stuff here, but it was, as I recall, like more cumbersome to get into, and it wasn't what it kind of came to be in terms of adding this narrative arc. Even, God, it's probably 2 years ago now, that first kind of big update they gave to that game. I had another one too. Well,
I could interject and say,
yes, please.
You could argue that Destiny has done it twice.
yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
And we're even seeing a more recent example right now, which they got an update that just came out. Anthem is going to be another one that's going to attempt to do this as well.
Yeah. And I'm rooting for that game. I want Anthem to be what it you're right. You guys are right that maybe this isn't such a unique situation. And it is kind of great that we're living, you know, this is the upside to games as service and all of that stuff, that these games can endure and teams can continue to improve them, and feedback, while sometimes vitriolic and hard to watch, sometimes, you know, as that explosion recedes and time passes and these teams can actually improve the games. But, you know, I guess the question you have to ask, and the question we have asked many times, is then why did they come out in the state they came out? You know, it's a weird thing to have these games improved in real time in public as an active product instead of, I don't know if that's better. I don't know. It makes me feel good looking at these success stories, but I think a lot of people would say, well, then they shouldn't have been released yet. Why did we have to pay for them in their unfinished state?
Oh, I'm with you on that. And actually another one, which I think is the poster child of this, would be Rainbow Six, because that game completely transformed itself in being one of the top esports out there. But I agree with you in the sense that why are we getting these unfinished products at launch? And is that pressure coming from the publisher? Because, you know, you got to meet the quarterly deadline for whatever financial reasons, and they're rushing the game out. Like, again, like we bring up Anthem, it is crystal clear that game had no business coming out when it did. It needed at least 6 more months in the oven, if not another year, right? But they put it out anyways, and here we are. So hopefully the lessons are starting to be learned right now that what does Miyamoto say? I'm going to screw it up, but he's basically saying that a game that's rushed is forever bad or something like that, however the saying goes. But I truly hope we start to get away from that. And I get the minor bug here, the minor bug there, but when you're missing entire features of a game that was promised, you know, leading up to his launch, that's a problem. And hopefully, you know, we're going to start getting away from that now, because as consumers, we got to vote with our wallet. If we're not buying these games and these publishers are getting diminishing returns on their investment, maybe they'll slow down and stop pushing these things out, you know, just to meet a deadline that it has to come out this holiday, or it has to come out, you know, quarter one of 2020 or whatever the case may be. But I would rather a game get delayed indefinitely if by the time it comes out, it's going to be right. Because, I mean, where we are right now is just unacceptable.
Well, I suspect actually the opposite is true. I think we're just going to all understand that there's an early accessification of the entire industry, that we're just all in early access all the time, and that games are a weird, unique product that evolves after it's out in the wild. And there isn't very many other things like that. I mean, I guess you could maybe say a TV show that goes from season to season evolves out in the wild as well. But there are very few media products that can continue to change and grow after you buy them. but video games are like that. And maybe it is a negative thing, but I'm kind of blinded by the silver lining right now because I'm so excited for No Man's Sky. I really am. Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's move on. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Yeah, I'm going to bundle these as a twofer. There's been some, this isn't Ninja moving to Mixer, but in more streaming wars. Is that going to be Blake's next book? Like, I do feel like there's a business case of whatever this stuff ends up being 30 years from now, like the battleground for live streaming. Mm-hmm. As that war battle heats up, there are two little stories here that we can kind of dive into. I think would be fun. One, Discord Go Live is coming out August 15th. You know, it's kind of allowing micro streaming, but I have to imagine it's kind of what we talked about games coming out in early access. I have to imagine it's starting small, ending big. I feel like this isn't the end game, but it's just you hit a button and you can stream the game to your Discord server. And right now, I think it's up to 10 friends. It's all browser-based. It's just, you know, click and go, trying to take down that barrier of entry of streaming. And along those same lines, Twitch has finally released its own broadcasting software, which I believe is called Twitch Studio. Yes. Yeah, Twitch Studio. And right now it's only in beta. I don't think any of us have played with it yet, but it is also their offering of getting you streaming, you know. The goal, they say, is not necessarily to compete with OBS or any of the other software solutions or requirements, I guess, that are required for streaming right now. But they want it to bring in new streamers and to, again, lower that barrier of entry to get started streaming. And so they've kind of tried to not hide things, but simplify the process of like your bitrate or your layout or this, that, and the other, and just kind of make it easier for everyone to stream. And I find it fascinating. The other piece I'll add to this puzzle that I'd love both of your takes on is Twitch is, you know, the 1,000-pound gorilla. It is the juggernaut of the streaming wars right now. And it still, it does, it blows my mind that in order to do it, you have, and consoles simplify it a little bit, but it requires a little bit of tech savvy. It's not, you know, the joke when I was growing up was like having teaching your parents to program the VCR or whatever. And like Twitch's software, stream key, setup, bit rates, mic inputs, cameras, and it's huge. So I can only imagine how big it's going to get when someone truly nails this, be it Caffeine, Discord, Twitch, Mixer, this like, just do it. It's simple, easy, but also customizable, and it looks cool. So Paris, I'm curious to get your thoughts. We'll start with Discord Go. Do you think this is going to stay a small kind of niche thing for you and your Discord server, or is this Discord, you know, drawing the line in the sand and entering this fight?
Oh, this is 100% them drawing a line in the sand. I mean, they're starting small with huge aspirations, in my opinion. And to be honest, this is the right approach because, like you said, Twitch is the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. You're not going to compete with that. Mixer just had to give Ninja $50 million to try and compete. So instead of doing that, start small, do it, you know, sample size within communities, let people start getting used to, oh, this is how the stream thing works. This is cool. This is cool. And then you start branching it out from there to the point where you no longer need a Twitch or a Mixer to bring in your entire audience to watch you stream. And now it all goes through Discord. It's like a one-stop shop to be able to do everything. So absolutely. I think we'll look up a year or two from now and go, oh, wow. Remember that Discord mini thing? With the, now it's a full-blown platform. I truly think that's going to happen.
Let me ask you guys this, though. Before that happens, do you think this feature is interesting? I'm kind of baffled by it. I mean, I get both of your takes on it being a baby step towards something larger, but is the baby step worthwhile? Do you think there are people who want to stream their games to 10 friends?
I think so. I think so as well.
That's such an interesting
thing. I think, Jeff, it's the, I mean, when I stream, I'm not streaming to a large amount of people. I don't stream regularly, but I do have a good group of friends that, and I enjoy watching, you know, some popular streamers, but also just some friends stream. And if my friends and I have a Discord chat, if I can't play, or, you know, if I'm away from my computer, but, or if I'm at work and I could second stream experience and I see one of my people on Dad Squad is streaming for a little while. Yeah, I think that's super cool. I think that's where this small thing works. It's like, here, it's you and your buddies. It's your text group. It's your small micro community. And a lot of people stream to nobody, you know? And so the availability to create these groups where you can stream to your friends or your hyper-specific community, I do think that's desirable for people.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I completely agree with you because I'm just taking myself as an example. Our Discord community, I could easily see us setting up, hey, we're going to, I don't know, as an example, we're going to do a raid or whatever in Destiny, right? And hey, come join and watch us while we do a raid. And maybe we don't want to broadcast it out to Twitch. I do it right there in the community. I do the at everyone. All of a sudden, all 800 of our members are alerted and they can come watch us, or sample size of them can come watch us if they choose. I think it would be a neat feature to promote within the communities of Discord. Versus trying to feel like you have to compete on the bigger platforms of Twitch or Mixer. And like I said, to me, it's going to get people that aren't comfortable streaming to at least give it a try. And then who knows from there, maybe they like what they do and they build upon that and they go from there.
Yeah, I guess I see it. I have had a hard time understanding this before talking to you guys, and you guys have clarified it a bit for me. But I guess I contextualized it in my head as buddies sitting around watching someone play, which when I was growing up, that was the worst. I just wanted the controller in my hand. I was waiting, sitting on the couch, waiting until I could get the turn. It was, you know, life or level. And we were just sitting around waiting, hoping that you'd get a chance to get a turn. And streaming to anybody feels like a different endeavor where you're having this audience, large or small, but it is anybody who can pop on and participate in a different kind of way. It just felt weird saying, hey, if you've got a few friends that want to watch you play a game, now they can. I was just like, I don't understand going, hey, Christian, you want to watch me play my video game?
I mean, honestly, yeah, I would, depending on what you're playing, you know?
I guess it's no real difference than streaming broadly. I just had a, it had felt, had a weird distinction in my head that didn't add up, but I guess it does add up.
Well, my question for you, Jeff, then, that I do want to get your take on before Paris or I color or poison your well, potentially. Do you think with Twitch introducing its own broadcasting software, Twitch Studio, do you think this is like, you know, can XSplit, Streamlabs, OBS, do they see a brick wall at the end of their tunnel?
They should.
Yeah.
They better. This is a tale as old as tech. A tale as old as tech. Anytime you build your business on someone else's business, you are at their mercy.
But games have done so well on Facebook.
Right. This is building games on Facebook. This is, I mean, there's a million examples of, hey, I made a thing because this service doesn't have that feature. Look at all the money I'm making. Oh, really? Now that service has that feature. Oh, I'm going away. I mean,
I wonder if there's enough of the customization, like Twitch. I think there will still be
what they have to hope for. They have to hope for. They have to. Now you become a Twitter app, right?
Huh.
Which is, our feature set has to outpace the actual Twitter app feature set.
That's a great point.
Or we're useless. So yeah. I mean, I don't think that their days are over, but their days are numbered, I would think, unless. And honestly, I'm shocked that Twitch took this long to do this. It is shocking to me. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I've enjoyed Caffeine as much as I have.
Yeah.
The service is because it's one click and you go.
Very simple.
So lazy when it comes to this stuff. I just don't want to hassle with it. If I want to get on and play a video game and then I go, well, I'll stream it, I don't want to hassle with anything. And Twitch, I cannot believe, I'm shocked. As you said, Christian, there has been an impediment to doing that. It hasn't seemed to stop Twitch, but I'm still shocked that Twitch went, who cares? People figure it out. We don't need to do it. We'll let these other third parties, you know, make the software.
And it wasn't even, we'll let other third parties, right, Paris? It was like, we need third parties to do this because we don't exist without it.
It's a weird thing that it took this long, but I think this was a no-brainer on their part. And if it is anywhere near simple to do, as it should be, as I hope it is, I think that OBS and XSplit and all those other third parties should be worried, because they don't. I mean, again, tale as old as tech. You don't have direct access to the API, so you're at a disadvantage. Twitch knows their API, they know their platform. And they can make the best version of this because they're building on their own platform and they have direct access to the inner workings of that platform. So this should be the very best version of it at some point. It should iterate up to being the best pretty fast. That's what I would hope for and expect. So, I think.
Paris, do you think this is one step towards even broader ambitions for Twitch internalizing their stuff? Is this kind of their Trojan horse where, it's so easy to do, and then they kind of just keep fortifying, that seems weird.
Nice.
Solidifying their fortress, their walled garden to kind of make it, you know, if you want to be on Twitch, you got to do Twitch everything, or is this just trying to make it simpler for everybody?
Okay, let me answer it this way. Do you like conspiracies?
I love them. You should have seen where my mind went after I read the news this morning.
So here's my conspiracy theory on this. I think it is very essential that Twitch take this step, like you were just talking about before, to get the third parties out of the equation, make this software eventually so easy to use. It's almost like a click of the button if you want to stream using Twitch, right? So now we don't have to worry about OBS, slobs, none of that. But I think my conspiracy is they're taking the step now because I think a year from now, we're going to be talking about Microsoft, Mixer, and whatever this next Xbox is going to be. I think they're going to build a solution that maybe you create everything on your PC, but you're going to send it to your console. So it's already all built in. You just turn on your console, you stream, you got your overlays, everything ready to go.
It looks good versus like garbage, the Twitch you know, yeah, Xbox or PlayStation kind of integration right now.
Exactly. So it's like you have the full streaming experience and you no longer need your PC to do it. You can do it from anywhere your console is plugged in. That's my wacky conspiracy. And if they're not thinking of that now, I want full credit for it. And please pay me royalties, because that's, I think that's where they should go.
Paris, that's not how this works. I'm sorry.
Have you met Microsoft? Let me ask you this question. How do they solve the camera problem?
Well, remember, you can plug a camera into the Xbox right now.
I know, but I think generally speaking, the reason streaming like this works on PCs is because how we sit in relation to our PCs. I think most people's console is in some weird spot. Their camera does – it's hard to – I don't know. I just feel like
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. It obviously, that's going to be the one issue. But again, I just think Microsoft, they're clearly committed to Mixer at this point, right? True. I mean, they're throwing so much money at it. So their thing is going to be, how many people can we actively get using it and watching content on here? Obviously, Ninja is the first play into that. I think the next one is just ease of use. And with a new console coming, to build it right into the console and make it just as professional looking as if you did it on a PC seems to be the logical thing. From my point of view, if I was running Microsoft, that's what I would probably try to do. So a long-winded way to say, this is why I think Twitch is making their own software, because I think they know eventually they're going to have to compete with Mixer on some level when it comes to that.
Jeff, to your point about the camera, like, what if the next Xbox, like, every console was bundled with like a camera smart speaker always on.
Smart speaker. You could talk to it.
And it would like kind of track. It would like zoom you around the room. Like if you're on Skype, for example, another Microsoft product, and like it connected you to the console, you know?
It would have to be always connected to the internet in order for that to make any sense at all.
Well, you know, right? I think maybe 5 years ago we wouldn't have been ready for that, but I think
you don't think so?
Can I say something on that real quick? Because we joke about that all the time. 2013. The messaging was an absolute disaster, as we can all agree. But you know what? If you really look at what they were trying to do, and I will contend this to this very day, I liked a lot of it.
I said that at the time. I was yelling from the mountaintops that, and people were like, Jeff, you're anti-consumer. How dare you? And I was like, no, you don't see the long game here. They just put out the very first Xbox with no 56K modem in it. And everybody said the exact same thing. And they went, no, we have to have broadband. And everybody went, oh, you're anti-consumer. All I live in dial-up. And they went, no. And they stuck to their guns. And guess what? The world changed.
You're dumb, Jeff. And I have the Google Home and Echo Show to prove it. I do not want.
I said that at the time, and I got so much hate mail. Nobody remembers that. Whatever. It's fine. Let me ask you this question, guys. When everyone is a creator and there's no audience, what happens?
You stream on Discord to 10 people.
No, I mean, literally every human being on the planet is a creator. Is there going to be like an audience crisis? There's not enough people watching because everybody's making. I don't know.
I mean, I think we're already, to some extent, to take this question, I'm not sure if it's a joke or not, seriously. I think to some extent we're already there, and I think it is we're reacting to it, but I think it is problematic for society at large, where everything is, you know, me, here's my Insta. Let me take up my picture in front of this because I got to share this with my audience, and we do less living and more creating. And as an artist who spends a lot of time creating, I understand like creating is incredible, but yes, I do think it's problematic, Jeff. I do. And it makes a me first society, and it adds to one upping and gamesmanship that I think goes to dangerous places to attract an audience, because so many of us, despite our interconnected nature of the internet, feel more alone today than we've ever felt. And yes, short answer, yes.
So it was a joke question.
I know.
But, no, I'm just kidding. I'm
but
kidding.
Welcome no, to really, my darkness.
It's a real question. Anyway, I'd love an enterprising audience member to go back and cut out some of my talk from 2013 about the the connect, and I'd love to hear it back because I think I was right. Anyway, this has been a fun episode already, and I haven't even gotten to my story of the week, which is another big, big story. But I want to thank our first sponsor before we do that, because we got two new sponsors this week, including Native. Now, we talk about being a geek in sneaks, which is great. And we actually had a very powerful email about that last week to end the show about how important it is to exercise. And we believe in it here on DLC about getting out in the world, putting on some sneakers and just, you know, walking, running, exercising, getting on a bike, getting in a pool, swimming. But while we encourage everybody to be a geek in sneaks, we do not want you to be a geek who stinks because sometimes that can happen. And our sponsor Native is here to help because Native is a deodorant brand that is actually made with some really good stuff, smells good, and has over 8,000 five-star reviews from their customers. This is a thing that will make you not be a geek who stinks.
Dude, can I tell you how good I smell right now?
Did you get yours?
Cucumber mint.
I haven't gotten mine yet.
Oh, so it says, you know, 14 days to, you know, to transition from one to the other. I'm on whatever this is, halfway through day one. I smell so good. I don't want to say don't try the other fragrances, but cucumber mint, holy.
Really? Oh, I'm so excited to smell you when I see you next.
Yes, please do. Please do. Seriously.
I got coconut and vanilla, which is the most popular scent. Okay. And I'm excited. It has not arrived yet. I'm so bummed, but you're all up in that cucumber mint.
Yeah, smelling good. My arms are up. I'm doing great.
They also have lavender and rose, eucalyptus and mint, and they also have special limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. Pretty cool. They offer an unscented formula and a baking soda free formula for people with those sensitivities. People love Native. They've been on the Today Show, Women's Health, Elle, Good Morning America, Pop Sugar, all these places talking about them. They have no animal testing. They are filled with ingredients that are found in nature. They do not have aluminum in them, which is actually harder to find than you might expect. And that's important. They say less is more with Native. They have fewer, simpler ingredients so that you know everything that's in your deodorant. Aluminum is actually linked to some serious health ramifications. And although Native is priced at a slight premium when compared to conventional deodorants, it's safe and effective. Plus, there's no risk to try it. They offer free returns and exchanges anywhere in the United States. And if you subscribe, you save 17%, which is $2 per stick. And Native is conveniently delivered to your door every 1, 2, 3, or 4 months, whatever you prefer. So try this. Smell like Christian and eventually me, hopefully soon me. We're going to hook you up with a deal here. You're 20% off your first purchase. Visit nativedeodorant.com. and use promo code DLC during checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com, nativedeodorant.com. Use promo code DLC during checkout, and you'll get 20% off your first purchase. Smell good. Don't be a geek who stinks. Native. All right, my story of the week is actually a huge story. This is a big one that has been developing over the week. First, Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo announced they were going to enact a new policy requiring developers on their platform. So this is all of the major platform holders uniting and saying developers on our platforms must disclose the odds of paid loot boxes. So if you're buying something in a game on a Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo platform, and you don't know what you're buying, if it's a mystery box of some kind, you must know the odds of getting the thing. Now, the details of that are a little vague. I don't know if you're actually going to see an odds disclosure below the box or at the time of purchase.
Not good.
Yeah, it just says, good luck.
Nope.
But evidently by the end of 2020, developers must disclose information on the rarity or probability of obtaining random items in loot boxes. And then Epic Games also came out and said they were going to adopt a similar policy. In fact, earlier this year, the Save the World Fortnite expansion made a change that showed players every item they would get in a paid llama before opening it. So they're bringing that change to Psyonix, which is the developer that Epic acquired that makes Rocket League. And every game that Epic publishes will have that as well. No word whether they will enforce it in the Epic Games Store, but publishers like Activision Blizzard, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Bungie, Electronic Arts, Warner Brothers, Ubisoft, Wizards of the Coast, all of them are going to take part in this because Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo have teamed up to do it. So Paris, I want to ask you about this. Not often we see all three of the major platform holders unite and do one thing. Here they are. Clearly this is in response to pending litigation, pending legislation that may require it anyway. But do you think this is a good thing? And what do you expect it will result in?
Like you said, this is happening because of the pending legislation that's about to go down. But I'm glad to see that so many are unified and they're doing this. This is the right thing to do. I mean, from my point of view, this is a form of gambling. I mean, I'm old, so I'm wise enough to realize if I do purchase a loot box, what my odds potentially could be. But there's a lot of younger gamers out there that don't realize this, and they throw a lot of money at this stuff, and they're not understanding the fact of what they're doing. So now that they're documenting what the odds potentially could be, maybe we'll see more people have an educated take on this as far as, should I buy a loot box? Should I, you know, invest in this particular game when it comes to that stuff? Me personally, I don't think I've ever bought a loot box ever. I just don't do it. If I can't earn it in the game, I typically just don't care about it. But I understand, obviously, this is huge business and a lot of people do. But I'm glad to see that they're now going to, like I said, educate people more on exactly what they're doing. It's absolutely the right thing. And what do I think this will mean long term? I think we're going to start seeing less loot boxes. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I hope this is the beginning of the end. Although, you know, there's something charming about, you know, buying a pack of cards or whatnot. But I think ultimately you're right. I think this is the beginning of the end for randomized loot in games. But Christian, as a current active lawyer, let me ask you this question. Do you think what bothers me about this is how unspecific we are about how this messaging is going to play out on these platforms? Do you think this will be the kind of thing that's going to be buried in a EULA somewhere? Like, oh, by the way, the odds of getting stuff is really minuscule, but don't read this fine print. Or do you think this will actually be effective and displayed in a way that informs people at time of purchase?
No. If there is a loophole will be found, and this is big business for many big businesses, and if they find that disclosing this stuff front and center hurts their business, they will try to bury it or put it away in a way that is more aesthetically pleasing to the consumer. And I think the same way EULAs are today. You know, you mentioned whether or not it'd be buried in a EULA. I don't know where it will live, and I don't expect these platform holders to necessarily say where it needs to live. But sometimes you need to have information out there, but it's you don't, like, where's the warning, you know, on your mattress or whatever it is? You know what I mean? Like, and some of them are silly, but they need to be there because of lawsuits or, you know, some industry regulation, and they are important, but we've also internalized them. And it's like, yeah. I know I'm going to do this Netflix thing. I got to click accept three times. You don't read any of it because whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's the approach that this stuff will take. But the positive of it is that while the actual odds and however this is implemented may be buried, the fact that we are talking about it now and it will continue to be talked about, that's how this idea is hitting the gamers' consciousness, right? Is this, when it launches, when it comes out, the fact that it is disclosed somewhere, Someone on the internet will pull that up. You will see stories of it again and again. I imagine companies will get caught with their hand in the cookie jar where they disclose odds, and then somewhere someone, you know, they release a new pack that doesn't follow it. I think there's going to be some growing pains with this stuff, and I think you're going to see some consumer watchdog groups making sure that the companies are being fair and ethical when they disclose these odds, and that the packs actually live up to them, because digital goods are different than physical goods. And these odds, I have to imagine, can change very easily and very quickly, just like the content can, right? So I don't think this is the cure for, you know, the loot box ales that are everywhere. But I do think it's a good step in terms of getting that information out there and being more transparent towards consumers. But if it can be buried, it will be buried as deeply and far away from anything the average consumer would see as possible, in my not currently a lawyer opinion.
Well, I hope that we're wrong about that. It would be nice to see it at the time of purchase as you hover over the box. I mean, it seems like what Epic, I don't play a lot of Fortnite.
So let me do this, sorry to interject. This already largely exists on Apple and Google Play stores. You seen it? I play a decent amount of mobile games. You don't see it.
That's right. But maybe this will be implemented differently. One hopes. I mean, it sounds like I said, I don't play a lot of Fortnite, so I haven't seen this, but it sounds like the cooperative component of Fortnite Save the World, which is not the part of Fortnite that everyone plays.
Right.
I said expansion. It's not expansion. It's more of a, you know, it's the section of the game that was what it launched with, which is the wave shooter that you can, where you can buy llamas. And it sounds like what they did with the purchasable llamas is, here's what's inside them. That would be great. If it actually worked out that way on in a lot of games. I don't know if there will be a consistent enforcement and who is enforcing it and how it's enforced. All that is not specified in any of this news story. So who knows? All right, well, let's move on and talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we like to call the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Paris, what games have you been playing this week?
You know, I've been playing a lot of Mario Maker 2. That game and just some of the insane levels that the community has been making has been fantastic. If I could tell one story real quick, there was a level that I was playing on the plane, and I was going from Dallas to Louisville. So it was only, you know, hour flight or whatever. I think I said every curse word in the book that entire hour to get to Louisville, because I could not get past this one part on the level. But that frustration is also the fun of why I like Mario Maker 2, because yeah, you can have your casual levels and you can just have these insane challenges that are on there. And it's like that, you just have that urge just pushing you on to like, I got to get past it. And then you have that sense of satisfaction once you do. So I've been playing.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. But not on that plane. I sure didn't.
So are you one of these sadomasochistic Mario Maker players where you're looking to get beat up? You're looking for that extreme challenge, or is it just you fall into those?
Yeah, I think I just fall into it. I'm one of those, well, like someone might tweet it at me or something like, oh, you should check out this level. Okay. All right. This is fun. Oh my God. You know, and then it's like, wait, I have to pass it now. I can't not pass it. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been playing that. Another game that I've really gotten back into, and I've kind of mentioned a little bit along the way, is Destiny 2. Mm-hmm. I've been a big Destiny player just since day one, and just been on that entire roller coaster the entire time. I purposely took a break for a while earlier this year. I was like playing a Division 2 and some other things, and I came back to it recently. And like you say, just what I've been playing this week, I've just been chasing a lot of the new content, you know, that they put out here over the past few months, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm really anticipating the new Shadowkeep expansion that'll come out in October now. And I think Destiny is just one of those games that I'm just always going to play. I just love that whole looter shooter genre, and Bungie's the best at making shooting mechanics. So, it's just a game I adore. And I would just say finally, so I don't get too long winded here, another game that I think I'll always play in some form is going to be The Witcher 3. I always tend to come back to it, and I always tend to find something new every time. And that game's been out now, what, 4 years? Something crazy like that.
I love that. I mean, we talk a lot on this show about games you're married to, you know, our forever games. And Destiny 2 is one that comes up a lot. A lot of people, obviously, game designed to be that. Witcher 3, not really a game designed to be that. It has a beginning, middle, and end. It's a long game. It's a deep game. It's a game with lots to do. But I find it so interesting that it can be your forever game. What do you... do you start it again? Or are you jumping back into unfinished quests? How do you make it a forever game?
It's a combination of both things of what you just said. I have officially 4 clears complete from start to finish, wow, starting over all the DLC. And then I have like certain, I call them scenario saves, where I'll go back in and I'll just make a different choice. And it takes me down another rabbit hole that I did not expect. Or I've had things where I've chased to try to be the Gwent Grand Champion in the game, which I've not done because I'll be honest, CD Projekt Red cheats. The game cheats. You can't. But it's fun. For me, it's fun. I just love that world. To me, I call The Witcher 3 the best game of this generation. You know, wow. I mean, obviously it's subjective, but for me it is. And I obviously look at what's coming next year from them with Cyberpunk, and it just has me over the moon excited, because I think for me, that is the gold standard for open world RPGs and what they were able to accomplish. Because I think the big thing about The Witcher 3 is choice, that you could make a simple choice that, all right, I'm doing this, and you don't see the ramifications for it till like 30 hours later in the game. Like, oh my God, I didn't realize because I helped that guy, it now doomed this other person to this fate or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's why I love that game. And that's why I keep going back to it, because I swear I find something new every time I play it.
So cool, man. Are you excited about the TV show?
Yeah, I wasn't at first. Those early test shots of Henry Cavill, like, ooh, yeah. I don't know about this, but that trailer they showed at Comic-Con kind of won me over. I mean, it's not going to be a direct translation from the games or taking it from the books, but I saw enough there that got me excited to say, okay, let's see what they're going to do with this. This definitely has potential to be something good.
Man, I love hearing you talk about that game. That's so great. I adore that game as well, but I'm not in your league. That is 4 clears. That's hardcore. I love it.
Can I borrow one of them and just say that I finally beat it?
Sure. I'll send you the file.
That's awesome. Cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What's on your playlist?
I think this is the first week in a very long time, Jeff, that I don't have anything new, and I'm not embarrassed by it, but I was shocked when I sat down that I don't think I've touched anything new since last week's show. I'm still working my way through Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 on Switch, and I am still working my way through Wolfenstein Youngblood on new PC. I will start with Marvel Ultimate Alliance. It's a little update. Still love the game, still very high on it. The more I play it, though, the deeper I get into it, the less I want to play it in long stretches. Another way to say that is the more the cracks show. The camera gets frustrating, or a boss is just—it's just like, be one thing or the other. Either make me care about this ISO gem upgrade path, where it's like how I spec out my characters actually matters, or just let it be a glorified clicker game, right? Where I'm just like punch, 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 don't do anything, and it kind of waffles. It's more just a clicker puncher, you know, doesn't require active thought in how you plan your team or your skill management. But there's like a little bit of it, and it's annoying enough to be like, either do it or don't. So I'm still very high on the game, but I tend to play in like 30 minute pick up and plays versus before I could kind of really get sucked into it. And then Wolfenstein Youngblood, my update on that is, I don't want it to end. And so I'm doing all of the side missions. I'm really enjoying my time in the world. I will have to say, after someone, I think it was Twitter, maybe an email, kind of called me out on it. And you are correct. I wish I had it in front of me. It is definitely the game where if I cared about the narrative, I would be complaining about it, because it is that Fallout style, like, you got to go save your son, or go work at this gas station for 12 years. It's like, as advertised in the marketing, it's like, go find your dad. And then you're like, yeah, we're going to go find him. And then they're like, but look at all these side missions. And my dad's so dead, right? Like, I've been working
Sorry,
for these,
dad.
Yeah, I've been working for these resistance fighters for years now. BJ's twin daughters are now both 42. They have kids of their own. Not really, but I'm spending so much time in the game that, yes, if I actually cared about the narrative, it would frustrate me, but I just enjoy the arcane level design and finding my new ways through those shared spaces. So those are those updates.
Very cool, man. I'm glad you're still digging on. It's no big deal to be digging on the same things week to week. That's great.
Yeah.
There was some news this week that made me squee with excitement. And that is a game I talked about maybe a year ago, more probably 18 months ago.
At least a
maybe?
Year or Morta ago.
Ah, Children of Morta is a game I got early code for quite a long time ago. And it is getting a full release. It is coming out September 3rd, I believe, which is the day before I leave on vacation.
If only it were coming out in a way you could take it with you.
I don't think it comes out on
Switch. It's not day and date on Switch? Oh.
I don't think so. I don't think it's day and date on any of the consoles. I should look that up right now.
Dang it. But I saw that announcement, and that was awesome.
Yeah. This is a game I absolutely adored and hadn't played in a long time. And I went, oh, my God, I'm so excited for September 3rd. I'm so excited. Wait a minute. I have it. I can play it right now. So I went and played it, and that's I rediscovered how much I love it. And like I said, it has been at least a year since I've played it. So when I turned it on, it went, your save is corrupt, you must start over. And I went, okay, I don't care. All right, let's do it. I know I put a ton of hours into this thing and unlocked a whole bunch of things, but I was like, I'm ready to start over. And probably the game has gotten a lot of updates since then. I think it has. I don't exactly remember how it starts, but I think it has a completely new beginning now. I know maybe people remember me talking about this a year, 18 months ago, whatever it was, but I'm going to do the spiel again because you need to be excited about this game coming out September 3rd. This is straight up a contender for game of the year for me. If the final release plays like the one I have on my hard drive right now, I honestly don't know how much of an update it's going to have on release day, if it is going to be a different build. As I play this one, in the upper left, it says beta build and then a bunch of numbers. So I don't know.
Console is October. Sorry, just to interject.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that too. It's a bummer, right? Anyway, this game is basically like if Diablo and a roguelike had a baby. It is very Diablo-esque. You're going down into dungeons and it's basically a twin stick shooter kind of deal, but different characters. There's this family that goes down in these dungeons, and you can play various members of the family. You unlock new members over time by finding them and finding more about their stories. And each one plays very, very differently. It's like each member of the family is a different class. And then you level up those characters independently as well. So you have to play the characters to level them up. But then there are also power-ups that you can buy. If you delve deep in the dungeon, you get these cool orbs that kind of randomly pop out from enemies, or you find them in chests. And those orbs, in the context of the dungeon itself, can be traded in at these little nodes for cash. And then the cash persists through death. So the orbs you lose if you die. So it's a bit of a risk reward in a roguelike kind of way to hold on to these orbs and then cash them in at the nodes and get the cash. And then you can spend the cash on upgrades that affect the entire family, like giving your entire family more health or more damage or even more specific kinds of bonuses. And then you also get really cool roguelike style upgrades, you know, very Dead Cells-y in the sense that you are finding something that will, you know, give you more movement speed at the cost of not having a dash, or more, you know, a lot more damage at the cost of, you know, your attack landing with less force, or, you know, these cool trade-offs that happen. You also get really awesome special attacks that you can do, magic and such, and you upgrade each character and they have skill trees as well. So it's very Diablo-like, it's very roguelike-like, but most of all, it is simply the best looking pixel art game I have ever seen. Huh. And that's saying something, because I've played a lot of great looking pixel art games, including Dead Cells. This is stunning, stunning to look at. It is absolutely beautiful, detailed. The animation is gorgeous. They use wonderful zoom ins and zoom outs that really highlight the beauty of the pixel art. Awesome. And it's got that kind of gameplay loop that I find very addictive of push your luck. How far can I go? Oh, I died, but in death, I'm able to make my next run better. And, you know, things ramp up, more enemies coming at you, specialized enemy that are going to drop a cool thing. So I could go through this door and get out alive, or I could stay here and fight that cool enemy because I think it's going to drop something. Oh, it killed me. Oh, I lost all my orbs. You know, that fun gameplay loop.
That fun? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It's, you know, I find that very compelling.
No, it is.
And,
he's like, you know, when you try to do something and then you mess up, you know, that is that kind of fun.
Yeah, this is an awesome, awesome game that doesn't really do anything differently than a lot of other games. It just does it more beautifully and really tight. It's very effective at what it does. Well, I guess that's not true. It does do some things differently. It actually tells a really beautiful story in a very beautiful way. You also unlock these little vignettes that are played out in pixel art with really cool voiceover narration of the family. You find out the interpersonal relationship of this family, of all the different members of the family. It's this big house that all the family lives in, and you can peek in on them. And every time you die, there's like a new little vignette that plays that tells you more of the story of this family. And there's some simple, beautiful things. Like one of the first ones is that you can click on this, the matriarch, or I guess it's not the matriarch. It's the one of the women in the family who's pregnant. And she goes out and she sets down this bowl outside, and all these woodland creatures run up and eat from the bowl. And this narrator's like, and she saw that they were outside. And it's just lovely. It adds a depth and a commitment to the characters that you don't find a lot. I mean, you don't find that in Dead Cells, for example. So I'm over the moon for Children of Morta. I've been excited about it coming out for a long, long time. And I played a ton of it a year ago. And then I was like, I'm going to wait till this game actually comes out, because, you know, what if they updated and my save gets corrupted? And then of course that's exactly what happened. So now I'm back in it. I don't know if the actual release date update will change the game again and my save game will be corrupted again, but I am back into this thing loving Children of Morta, which should be on everybody's radar, I think, if you like these kinds of games, that is. All right. Let's thank our next sponsor, which is another new sponsor, but it's one I bet you've heard of, DoorDash. We're in the 21st century, everybody. We're in the 21st century. That means food will come to you. How many times have you been playing a video game or watching a movie or whatever, and you're like, oh, I got a rumblies in my tumblies. But I'm loving this moment. I don't want to leave this awesome game. All my squad mates are counting on me. What do I do? Well, I guess I can order pizza. And then you order pizza for the billionth time. No longer! The shackles to pizza are off! Because now DoorDash has your back. Yes, there's pizza on DoorDash, but there are also over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So expand your mind beyond pizza. Get food delivered to you. Do not leave. Do not stop doing the thing you want to be doing. Get food delivered to you. Don't worry about dinner. Use DoorDash. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code DLC. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code DLC. Don't forget, promo code DLC gets you $5 off your first order from DoorDash. So give it a shot. Unshackle yourself from the thing that has been traditionally delivered to you. Now everything gets delivered to you. Food from anywhere. Food from restaurants you like. Food from places like Cheesecake Factory, Chick-fil-A, Chipotle. These are national restaurants that they have listed here. But there's like awesome restaurants all in your area. Even, I'm sure, you know, not national chains. Like actual mom and pop places. Do that. All right. Well, I got to talk a little VR. I know, Paris, that you said you have not experienced VR at all. Is that correct?
No, other than a couple demos here and there, like Minecraft, no VR for me.
Well,
Jeff is getting in his car and coming to you. He's en route.
I'm on my way.
Can I explain why?
Yes, please do. Please do.
Okay, my philosophy on VR has been this, that I'm waiting on the 2.0 product. I feel like right now we're still in such early days that we've still not, and please educate me if I'm incorrect on this, we've not seen a fully fleshed out VR experience that I can go into and play a game from start to finish that feels like a complete actual game or experience or social thing or something of that nature. The technology is getting there. I just don't think it's 100% there yet. That's why I've held off not getting, you know, into Oculus or getting into PlayStation VR. I feel like in the next couple of years, there's going to be a 2.0 product of this that is going to truly realize what VR should be. So that's why I've held off. And no one has yet to convince me to jump in now. So you could be the first.
Well, I sort of take that as a challenge. I think that 2.0 is here. I think this is what we're experiencing in the last couple of months here is 2.0. I think Oculus Quest is 2.0. I think Oculus Quest is that experience that because it's untethered, because it's instant and easy and all of the kind of mishigas of getting into VR has been removed, I think that might be the thing that could convince you. It's quite something to just put on a headset. I've done this with really the only reason I have on the Oculus Quest at this point is to convert people. And I'll explain why in a second, but it's so great to be able to have this portable thing that doesn't require tethering into anything that you can just put on someone's face and it doesn't feel as bad as some of the other ones where it doesn't cover your ears. It still has good audio, but it doesn't cover your ears. You just wear a pair of goggles. You put a couple of things in their hands, and now they're in another place and able to play these really awesome games in any space at any time, super quick to set up. So I think that is the 2.0 experience, in my opinion. But I also got another 2.0 experience this week, which is why I want to talk VR, and that's the Vive Index. That's a 2.0 experience on the other end of the spectrum, which is still tethered, still requires external sensors, but is 2.0 because of how much better it is than the first generation of headsets, just from a fidelity point of view. And I am truly blown away by it. I can't even express how much better it is than Vive. It is in a completely different league than the Vive.
And you're using your Vive wand still, too. You're talking about just the headset. Or did you get Knuckles?
I got the controllers, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. So what? In which ways is it? Like, let's separate headset from Knuckles, because I know they're selling it as, you don't need Knuckles. Like, Knuckles are great, but, you know, you can patch this together, right?
Right. So I did not get the new sensors. There are new sensors that are supposed to be better, but I can't imagine you'd notice in my small space. I can't imagine you'd notice any upgrade in the sensors. And I already had the sensors mounted on the walls for my Vive. So it was a really beautifully simple moment of me just plugging in the new headset, Steam VR remembered my sensors, remembered my room scale. I didn't have to do anything. I just used the new headset and new controllers. The only thing I had to do was have it register my new controllers and then download an update because an update had populated before I turned it on. Very simple setup, which was really nice. I mean, obviously I'd gone through the complex part of the setup the first time I installed the Vive sensors, but I just appreciated the fact that it was simple for me. But yes, the headset itself is a massive upgrade from both the Oculus Rift and the Vive, which are both what I have. Obviously a huge upgrade from Quest, but I put Quest in a completely different category because its benefits are different, right? We're not comparing apples to apples here. So there is a tighter, higher resolution, denser pixels on the actual screens that you're looking at through the lenses. And one of the things that has always been a complaint for VR users, including myself, is the little bit of screen dooring you see because your face is pressed up so closely to the screens and the resolution has been relatively low. You see the distance between pixels. And so you see the sort of screen door effect where things are a bit pixelated when you look at them through the headset. That is almost completely gone. I still see it a teensy bit in the Index, but it is almost completely gone. There's also a slightly wider field of view. And I'm convinced that field of view is the next frontier for VR. As field of view improves, that is going to be a dramatic feeling of immersion where you will not see any edges at all to your view. Even this small improvement in field of view is dramatic to me. I am amazed at how big a deal it feels in the headset to just have slightly more peripheral vision taken up by the virtual world. It's impressive. And the headset is way more comfortable. I mean, light years more comfortable than Vive. Just, it's like,
which was the worst, in my opinion.
It was the worst. Yes, by far. I mean, I think you remember, Christian, how much I purchased to attempt to improve the comfort. I was buying welder mask harnesses and counterweights. And I bought a lamp from eBay that I, you know, strung the cord through so it wouldn't weigh down the back of my neck, because the lamp like had this cool arcing mount. So I took the lamp off of it and strung it was craziness. I'm a crazy person. This is way more comfortable than any headset I've worn so far. And I don't really know why. It just fits better. And I'm wearing it with glasses most of the time too, which is crazy. I think I might invest in some of those VR lenses that you can put in, the prescription lenses that you can pop in. There's like $60. Anyway.
I mean, what's $60 at this point?
So bad. I'm so bad. yeah, pot committed. Throw bad money after good. It is much more comfortable. It is much more comfortable. And I find myself not fatigued. My face doesn't feel heavy. I'm not fatigued after long stretches in the headset. And it just, everything looks way better. There's a much higher refresh rate on the screen. So it goes up to 144 hertz. I'm playing almost everything at 120 hertz. So instead of 90 frames per second in each eye, which is what they consider sort of best practices for VR, I'm at 120 frames per second per eye. And that smoothness is dramatic and appreciated. I mean, you have to have a pretty beefy rig to push it, but I do. And I have yet to try the 144 hertz, which is supported by the Index, because a lot of people online are talking about how it just lags your computer. Even beefy computers are having a hard time. So I'm not going to even push it because it's so much better already. So it just, everything looks great. I popped back into Skyrim VR, which I think you remember me describing as looking like a butt, like someone's butt. And it looks way better. It doesn't have a blurriness. It is crisp. And yeah, the textures are still low res, but now I'm like, oh, I'm going to download all the mods. I'm going to try to play Skyrim VR the way some people have described with all these crazy mods on. I'm so excited to do that. And get this, Christian, I tried Revive for the first time, which I hadn't even experimented with because I'd had an Oculus and I'd spent so much time in the Oculus game store. Most of my VR games are purchased through that. Revive is this free third-party app that actually has been endorsed by Oculus that allows you to play Oculus Game Store games in Steam VR. And it works great. It's so simple. You install it and it just adds a tab on Steam VR that says Revive. And when you click on that tab, it just shows all the games you own in Oculus Game Store. And while not everything worked, for example, Vader Immortal crashed on me, which bummed me out, but it's really new. So I'm hoping Revive updates and makes that playable. I was able to play Robo Recall, for example, which just looked stunning. Stunning. I mean, that's a beautiful game anyway, but in the Index, I could not believe how good it looked. It was stunning. I'm like, this really is 2.0, man. This really feels like a massive upgrade.
That is high praise.
I mean, it's a very expensive product. I would be the first to admit shouldn't have bought it, but I did.
you're actually highlighting what my hesitation has been, and I'm actually glad that you're saying this. I just didn't feel that the hardware was where it needed to be from a fidelity and a vision standpoint, and that's why I've held off. And it sounds like from what you're saying now, it's definitely getting closer to where I would be satisfied. And you know, you fully admit it's going to require an investment to be able to even play it in its current state right now. So sure, it may be better. And now I'm just speaking selfishly. Sure, I can probably go out, get the hardware and do it. But from a mass appeal standpoint, there's probably still a big barrier to entry as far as just being able to afford it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the Quest lives, right? It's sub $400 and it's all you need. You don't even need a computer. It's a standalone device. It's not going to look nearly as good as the Index, but it's certainly passable. And there's lots of really compelling products on it. Lots of awesome games to play. So I still would push newcomers to VR or somebody that was curious about VR to give Quest a try, because it is a great product that I think really sells the idea and you understand what's so special about it from my perspective. But where we're going now with this next generation of headsets with Index, and there's a couple of other ones that are kind of pushing the high end, it is what I wanted. It is what I dreamed of, where you don't have to excuse anything. You don't have to go, well, yeah, but it doesn't look great. It looks great for VR. Like, games look great. And I'm so excited about, you know, more games coming that, and yes, we're getting fewer of them now than at the initial launch of VR, but dude, I'm so excited for No Man's Sky next week. Like, to play it in my Vive, or excuse me, play it in my Index. I think it's going to look crazy. So I should talk about the controllers real quick. I still think the Oculus Touch is the best VR controller. It's better. It really, really is. I don't know if you remember, Christian, the Vive controllers have that grip button on the side, which I never liked. They have gotten rid of the grip button in these new knuckle controllers, but now the entire shaft of the thing you're holding is a button. So you grip by actually just squeezing the controller itself, which is a good idea in theory, but ultimately I kind of just prefer the Oculus Touch's grip button. It's got like a your middle finger is a button. You know, your middle finger pushes in a button, which they use as the grip button. And it's just better. It's just better to know when I'm pushing that button or when I'm not, instead of having to squeeze this thing. I don't know. It's cool. The knuckle controllers are cool because you slip your hand into a harness, into a,
so you can like let go of the whole controller without dropping it, and like not like a wrist strap or whatever.
Yeah, it's a strap for, it goes over the back of your hand. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you can like completely open your hand and let go of it, and it stays attached to you, which is cool and slick. And now it has sticks on it instead of the very terrible Vive like thumb sensor pad mm-hmm. thing. So that's another thing that's great about Revive is that it really has a one-to-one relationship with the Oculus Touch. So Revive is able to, you know, port these games over from Oculus to these controllers much smoother. You don't have to, you know, map the buttons. It just works because it has sticks and it works like the touch controllers. I just prefer the touch controllers. I think they're better overall. They just are better, in my opinion. But I'm sure I'll be talking a lot more about this because I'll be playing lots of No Man's Sky on it. I'm so excited. They're expensive, but this is right now, from what I've played, this really is the cream of the crop for VR experiences. It is a dramatic improvement in visual fidelity. Oh, and the audio is crazy too. I didn't even remember this as I was opening it up. It's got full earphones, but they sit out from your head. So they don't touch you at all. You know how the Oculus Quest doesn't have earphones at all, but mm-hmm. there's audio coming out? This actually does have earphones that drop down, but they sit like 2 inches away from your ears. So they're directional and positional, and they still give you that positional audio, but they don't touch you. So you don't feel them on you, which I love.
And you can still probably hear some outside. Like you could hear someone open the door if you didn't have your volume cranked up, which I think is
yeah,
nice.
But it's less, you know how if you're playing Quest, everyone can hear it?
Yeah.
It's less that because now it has a bit of shielding there.
Mm.
So it's cool. I dig it, man. You got to come over and try it. Yeah. You really do. It's quite something. And there's only one cord now. It's a lot lighter of a cord. So you're still tethered. You still need the external sensors, which is a bit of a bummer. But it's a much easier experience overall. All right. I talked about that a lot. I'm sorry. I'm very excited. It was very expensive. It was my birthday and I treated myself. Don't tell my wife. All right. That's going to do it for this. Oh, no, it's not true. I did get a listener who sent in a review of a VR game. So I wanted to talk about that here in the VR segment. This comes from Noman, who sent this to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. He says, hello, Jeff, Christian, and honored guest. Been a listener for many years now and wanted to try my hand at a quick review for you guys. I've been playing a game called Final Assault in VR. This game is made by Phaser Lock Interactive, makers of Twisted Arrow and Final Approach. It combines the fast-paced RTS action of something like Command & Conquer with the tower defense lane battling of a MOBA to make for an incredibly deep and rich gameplay loop. It's set in World War II, so you pick between several divisions for both the Allies and the Axis. Each division is specialized with a certain type of unit, like tank warfare or aerial superiority. You then square off across a series of extremely well-designed and great-looking maps, either versus a computer opponent in the campaign or in the online multiplayer. Players use auto-generated money to craft units and then direct them around the map to take control of key choke points and resource collection areas. Micromanaging is a must, as the units have strengths and weaknesses that have to be constantly accounted for in any given battle. This makes for every fight as a test of wits and willpower unlike any I've experienced in VR. For folks who are really serious about the game, there's even a newly established community-run league that you can join and compete in. It's called the VRML, where your game can be broadcast and commented on by professional casters. The developers are active on Discord and are constantly working on adding to and improving the game and are clearly very passionate about the game they make. I highly recommend checking this one out if you have the time. As always, thank you for everything you guys do for the gaming world and making the world a better place. Sincerely, Noman. Again, that game is called Final Assault. And it is in VR. He didn't say which VR headset he used to play it, but I don't know which one it's available for, to be honest with you. Probably Steam. Thank you. If you'd like to have a review on our show, you can send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for that. But Paris Lilly, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Oh, again, thank you. This has been quite the honor to be on DLC. This is a lot of fun. And you tried to convince me about VR, but you still got more work to do. I'm just going to fully agree.
Well, someday I'll have to just be in the same place at the same time with my Oculus Quest, and maybe I can. Seeing is believing.
That's absolutely. What I mean. Yeah. No, but again, seriously, thank you for having me on. This is awesome. I'm really glad that you invited me and got a chance to chat.
That is absolutely our pleasure. Tell the folks listening where they can keep up with you and the things you make online.
Sure. So do a podcast called Gamertag Radio. That can be found on your favorite. Apple Podcasts now, Google Play. I like to joke and say it's on the ColecoVision, but basically Spotify, we're everywhere. But basically RSS feed, you can find us over at GamertagRadio.com. You can find us over at Audio Boom if you want to subscribe. We're also on Twitch. We stream the podcast live every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern. And that is twitch.tv/GamertagRadio. And you can go there to see our schedule when we're playing other games and those type of things. I also have to shamelessly plug my YouTube channel because I just started doing it. And I'm slowly but surely trying to grow content over there. So that is youtube.com/C/Marcello, M-A-R-C-E-L-L-O 696. That is my personal YouTube channel. And if you'd like to see the ramblings of an angry old man, you can find me on Twitter at Vicious696.
Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Oh, believe it or not, for me and my family, it's back to school this week. Everybody, you can follow me to... No, it is back to school week. That's... dude, this is how I know I'm both old, but also not as old as I feel sometimes. That makes sense, where it's like... I didn't notice that Target had all the back to school stuff up because I'm old enough to not care and like not have that ruin my summer. But I'm still young at heart that when I did realize it was back to school this week, I got bummed. Not because I'm old and my little kids are growing up, but I was like, oh, back to school. anyway, that's for me. Update. Joke worked. The joke worked. Ran it out.
Oh, nice.
Was last week. It doesn't have a hard end yet, but just the idea of celebrating irresponsibility was the premise, and it's working well.
A hard end. You just walk off stage.
Right. I like to end my jokes the way like 70s rock songs ended, just with the fade out.
Yeah, you just leave the guitar on the stage playing that last note, and you walk off.
Yeah, that's so. Look for that.
That was you walking off stage.
This show, I stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer, typically Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific. And next week, can I say it?
Well, next week is our 300th episode of DLC.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty special guest who has agreed to join us.
Yeah.
Should we say who, or should we leave it as a surprise?
I mean, you've been talking to them, so, you know, I'm down. But schedules can change, but I think we're...
Schedules can change.
I think we're committed, right? We're bringing it back.
If you have been listening to us since the beginning, and you know about the origins of DLC, I think this will be a pretty special guest for you. It's a special guest for us.
Yeah.
Guy we haven't talked to in far too long.
Yeah, very excited. So that's next week. It'll be episode 300. Looking forward to it. Jeff, what about you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I do a movie review podcast called the Slash Filmcast, which you can find at slashfilmcast.com. We're actually taking this week off, but last week we had a very fun review of Hobbs and Shaw, if you want to listen to that. But we are taking a week off, and we'll be back talking about The Boys next week. Also, I'm a dungeon master in a show that I'm extremely proud of called The Dungeon Run. It's a live play Dungeons and Dragons show. It's basically storytelling. It's if you've only heard me talk about other people's stuff, this is me making something that I thought up. It is a story that I'm weaving with the help of five extremely talented actors who are acting out the adventurers, and also a team of extraordinary production people making models and cool maps for us. And we're improvising it and building it and playing it in real time. It's extraordinary. And I'm so proud of it. Real ups and downs, great drama, laughs, tears. It's something special. So I urge you to give it a shot. You can listen to it as a podcast. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. It's called the Dungeon Run Podcast. Or you can watch it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run. or you can tune in live as we record it on Caffeine Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun. All right, let's get the show wrapped up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Paris, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
My suggestion is, with everything that's been going on in just the past few weeks across this great nation of ours and the world, just be kind to each other. I mean, it's really that simple. I think it's very easy to be kind, and you really have to go out of your way to be angry at people and say unpleasant things. So just be kind to each other. That's really it.
Bravo. Second to that one. I urge people to just try it. Just try it. It actually makes you feel good too. My dad used to say, or not used to, he still says, that, you know, if you smile, if you force yourself to smile, you end up actually wanting to smile. If you're feeling bad and you just force your face into a smile, you'll actually feel better. It's kind of amazing. It has worked for me in the past as well. So do that to other people as well. Christian Spicer, do you have a parting gift?
Well, I feel foolish now. I was going to recommend Find a Nemesis.
that also helps.
Feels like not the right time. No.
Channel all your anger into one person. preferably do a podcast with
that person every week and mention they are a nemesis at the beginning. Paris is the best. Mine is, in these dog days of summer, watch the thing that you haven't watched that you keep saying you're gonna watch. Like, whatever, or read the thing, whatever that is. For me, it's always shows. I'd be like, oh yeah, Marvel Listeners Maisel, I should watch that. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying that for 3 seasons now. Watch it. Just start it. See if you like it. Or either that.
This is just you talking to you right now? No, talking to yourself?
I'm talking to everybody. I'm talking to you last week when you hadn't started The Boys. I'm talking to my friend Ben, who hasn't started any Stranger Things, but talks about how he loves the idea of it. Watch it. Start it.
Yeah, what else are you doing? You're not doing anything else.
Yes, exactly.
You're not busy.
Thank you. Thank you for agreeing. Give it a shot. Do the thing. Or the other side of that coin is just admit you're not, right? That's fine too. But just find that thing. Go to your backlog of life and do that thing that you've been meaning to get to. Give it a shot. It's the end of summer. What do you got to do? You know, go to Target, buy school supplies? Boo. Watch that show.
Awesome. We did get a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com from Leonard, who says, with the biggest Dota 2 tournament, the International, on the horizon, Red Bull released a 90-minute long documentary, Against the Odds. It's about OG, last year's winners, and pictures their story starting in the early days of the Dota 2 esports. It's the biggest Cinderella story in the history of Dota and maybe of all esports. And this documentary shows you the whole story of this team. It's a story about friendship, disappointment, betrayal, and in the end, about the win of the absolute underdogs. If you're worried that you do not understand what's going on because you don't play Dota, don't worry. It is not at all focused on the game, but rather the story behind it. And it's directly addressed to a new audience not familiar with the game. With many negative stories in the world about video games, it's truly heartwarming. Cool. He says, you two are doing a great job. Greetings from Cologne. Ah, thanks, Leonard. Appreciate that. So that is, again, it's called Against the Odds. And it is available, I think, on YouTube. Isn't that right? Is that correct? He doesn't say specifically.
I believe so, yeah.
I think it is, yeah. All right. My parting gift is more directed to the parents out there. And I know that we have quite a few. All three of us are parents. But if you've got younger kids, I am always searching for good children's books that don't make me want to pluck my eyes out with tweezers. Because as you know, if your kid, if you read a book to your kid, you're going to read it 40,000 times. And there's really, for me, I've found there's Dr. Seuss and everything else. There's so few books that aren't Dr. Seuss that I'm willing to enjoy reading over and over and over again. But I have found some new ones, and these are new to me. I don't know if you guys are aware of them, but I thought I'd bring them up because they're excellent. They are books by Andrea Beatty and David Roberts. There's three of them. The only two that I have are Rosie Revere, Engineer, and Ada Twist, Scientist. These are stories about little kids in Mrs. Greer's second grade class, and I guess they're going to continue this series and make, you know, all the little kids that are in the class. But they're rhyming, and both of these stories have made me cry in reading them to my kid because they're so beautiful. Rosie Revere, Engineer, is about the descendant of, you know, Rosie the Riveter, who wants to be an engineer, but the things she makes fail. And the lesson she learns is that that's part of the creative process. Great aunt, Rosie the Riveter, tells her, oh, it's awesome that you failed because now you got that out of the way. And that's the first step to making something, which is like such a beautiful sentiment. And then Ada Twist, Scientist, is about a girl who doesn't talk until she's three. And then once she starts talking, all she does is ask questions, which is what scientists do. And it's about her parents coming to terms with the fact that they have a little scientist on their hands who wants to experiment and ask questions. They're both beautiful, beautiful. And they're beautifully written, wonderful rhymes, fun to say to your kids, and great, great art. So check those out. Rosie Revere, Engineer, and Ada Twist, Scientist by Andrea Beatty and David Roberts, if you have kids. Are you aware of these, Christian?
Yes, sir.
I thought you might be. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Paris Lilly and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those cool bumpers. Thanks to all the folks in our live chat room listening in real time, making the show better as you listen. We appreciate that. And thank you to all of you who download the show, interact with us, spread the word. We're grateful. Thank you for being here with us. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.